Welcome to the 108th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. I'm joined, as always, by the wonderful Quizmaster Mark Davis.
No alliterative tongue twister-esque name for me today.
No, I failed so hard last time, I just figured I'd avoid all embarrassment and just get right through it. You're wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful I'll take. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you're wonderful. How are you doing, Lee?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. Trivia. Let's see here. Trivia. That's what this podcast is about.
Something like that. Yeah. Still.
Again, we did not prepare an intro.
Yeah. Still missing the live. Still missing the live setting.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah, and being a musician and knowing how far away concerts look, and just trying to kind of figure out what the future in general looks like for enclosed spaces, mm-hmm. and people standing next to each other, being next to each other and not worried. I know that trivia looks like it's a lot closer than music is, or at least, concerts. I had a memory pop up on Facebook when I went to go see Smashing Pumpkins 2 years ago, which I completely forgot that I went to go see Smashing Pumpkins. That idea flooded my mind entirely. But, I was just like, man, I don't know when. I don't know when this is going to happen again. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that's going to happen. And as a musician, it drives me crazy because that back and forth, a lot of people were very quick to make jokes about how introverts were made for this, when quarantine started, and haha at extroverts. But it is a serious, I think pretty quickly people started realizing how serious it was that extroverts feed off of providing something to people, mm-hmm. or that interaction with people or whatever. And that it's not for some people, I'm sure it's an ego thing, but for others, it's just that's how you get your life force or whatever. And, I'm glad that, that trivia is probably closer, that you don't, level of people being close to each other and that level of anticipation and excitement isn't, as necessary for trivia as it is for a punk rock concert
it's a little bit easier to maintain a natural physical distance at trivia.
Yeah.
Than at a concert, sure. Everybody wants to be right up front. Everybody's pushing to get up front.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
I was talking to Mark Stewart, who is a local musician who had just started a band. And we were kind of talking to each other about what we think the future will look like as far as music is concerned. And he was like, yeah, you won't have people out there open up the pit. I was like, no, you'll have people open up the pit and keep it open.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that as long as people are willing to obey the rules and be smart about it. But I mean, I'm saying that, and as I'm saying it, bands like Great White and Vanilla Ice and all these other people are trying to plan concerts with thousands of people in attendance.
Well, so, to be fair, Vanilla Ice did pull back. He did not perform the con. He said he was going to about a week before, but 2 days before it happened, he put out a video that was like, what's up, everybody? I've been listening to you, what you're saying. I didn't realize it was that big of a deal. And it's it's been 2.5 months now, man. I think it was a July 4th show,
Yeah, but there was that guy Chase Rice, mm-hmm. who did something similar, who had a concert or whatever.
There was a New Metal Fest in Wisconsin, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Static X and Flaw. Flaw was there.
Of course they were. Why wouldn't Flaw be there? I'm sorry if we have any Flaw fans, but you may
no,
want to seriously
I know
reconsider.
We don't.
Yeah.
What's a Flaw fan, Mark? I've never met one.
I think the Venn diagram of Flaw fans and no listeners is probably a sliver, if anything at all.
Yeah.
And I have nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with that. But I was just kind of waxing nostalgic. you know, we were talking a little bit off mic. Someone mentioned Robin Williams today, and I like had this realization that I remember where I was when I found out Robin Williams died, and I was at trivia, and I was like, man, like I've been doing this so long between playing and running trivia that I now have like trivia related memories, and that like finding out about his suicide. Like, I remember turning around to other teams and being like, Robin Williams is dead. And everyone was like, what? Like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. And like pretty quickly, you saw everybody like pick up their phone and like started looking, and everybody was just like, holy shit. Like, it was a very sobering, moment. But, it's just interesting to me that I have all these memories that are trivia related, and that they seem so distant now of a time where we were all sitting at bar stools next to each other, or tables next to each other, doing that kind of thing. Very strange.
Yeah, I don't know if I have too many memories, historic memories. I do remember one time sitting at Nice Guys with you, watching the World Series. I'm not like a huge sports guy, as we've established on the show, but it was a pretty important World Series. There was a team playing that didn't win too frequently, and I think you were watching it on your phone and I was watching it on mine, and our feed was like 30 seconds apart, and you were like, holy shit, the Cubs won the World Series.
I remember that. Yeah, that was a blast. That was crazy.
That might have been before or after after one of your trivias, maybe.
It was after one of my trivias. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember just being like, as a Red Sox fan, knowing that they had, you know, such a long, stint of not winning, and the Bill Buckner flub and all that stuff, I knew what it, I knew how it felt to some extent. I'm not a huge baseball fan, so I'm not going to try and make it sound like it was the most important thing to me. I didn't cry when they finally won, but, you know, the Cubs were one of those teams where I was like, all right, you know, they got to be the next to like break the seal. And I felt really, really happy for Cubs fans that, you know, it happened for them. Mm-hmm. And, and I always think back to, I'm sure your three song stories where you did a trivia after three song stories.
Oh, that was a pretty epic night for sure. Cause we did the interview and then we had all music trivia afterwards. I do miss a lot of, I miss all that, that live energy from the trivia, even just like the little competition between our regular teams, like the Moist Men and the Wet Boys. You know, it's been a while since we had a Moist Men versus Wet Boys battle, you know.
Oh, it's been ages, it feels like.
Well, maybe next year, or when all this blows over, as Kyle likes to say.
This year was supposed to be the 6-year anniversary trivia at Nice Guys. Mm-hmm. In October, and I'm hoping if we can get our shit together, but I think pretty much everybody knows now we're recording in Florida, where we just surpassed New York as the second most COVID positive cases in the United States. So, you know, we're not moving in the right direction necessarily. So just hoping we get our shit together.
Yep. Until then, we have virtual trivia, right?
Yes.
To tide us over. And this podcast.
Yes.
Speaking of which, why don't we go over our weekly wrap-up?
Please.
Hey, Mark, how was Nice Guys trivia on Wednesday night?
Great. We had a bunch of teams. Claire from the Free Coasters, one of the bands that I'm in, played along with Mike and Gina and Brett and Abby. So that was a lot of fun. Manu is back. And then we had Alex and all of them. We had a couple of other listeners playing, which was very, very awesome. Paige, who played last week with her friend Mariah played without Paige. And Elise came in after the second round started. So we had a good number of teams. Manu in the first round, tying with Seth, both with 26 points. Nice. Just cleaning it up, and Manu winning the tiebreaker. The second round, going to, who in the hell won the second round? I believe it was Alex's team. Peanut the Dog gives well wishes to Ghislaine Maxwell. Matt, our proverbial lightkeeper, won the second round with 43 points. So that was awesome to see that. And the last round was won by Peanut the Dog gives well wishes to Ghislaine Maxwell with 76 points. We also had Adam Prowitz playing again by his lonesome this time with a team named Trivia Online School in Person. Thanks, Death DeSantis, which definitely gave some pause. Like, here we are, you know, considering school for children, you know, in person when, you know, apparently Rick Scott, our governor, is not going to send his kids to school.
Mm-hmm. Our senator, and we're having, Rick Scott.
Or senator, yeah, sorry, mm-hmm. No longer governor, senator. You know, we're making sure that we're doing trivia virtually, but we're about to ship.
It is absolutely fucking ridiculous, isn't
it? It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, I don't have a kid, so I don't have a dog in the fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do have an ex with a son that I, you know, helped raise for a long time, who I love dearly and I'm still in contact with. You know, if I had any say in his life, I would tell her, and I think she already knows, do not send him to a fucking, you know, just, you know, there's so many schools where people are already, before school even starts, are either dying or coming up positive. It's just fucking apeshit insane.
I will be very surprised if in Florida the schools stay open even. I think they're going to have to probably just put the kibosh on it and, you know, do virtual. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. That's the game our governor is playing. He's playing the "we'll see what happens" game.
Yeah, it's almost like a game of chicken. You mm-hmm. know, it's like just seeing if he can will it to happen or coax it to happen. But how was your Thursday trivia?
We had two quizzes and an audio round on Thursday. First up, we had quiz number 57. My brother-in-law, Patrick, won the first quiz of the evening with 144,463 points. And for quiz 58, it was H-Bomb and Friends getting his ninth victory, if I recall, with 100,320 points. And our audio round was 90s hip-hop groups, which our biggest knower there was Kay Hitchie, who earned 189,110 points.
I did see Patrick at my trivia for a little bit playing with Alex. I did not see Grantastic Glenn, who told me he'd be playing my trivia this week. He was a no-show, unfortunately. But I did learn. I started picking up saxophone a little bit this week, and we talked a little bit before that the woman teaching me saxophone, Amanda, who's in a great local ska punk band called Bargain Bin Heroes. H-Bomb is her brother, which I had no clue. Mm-hmm. So I told her that she needs to try and get together with him and his dad and a couple of other people that used to play at Gather when you used to run trivia there. Try and get them to get together at my trivia and try and take over, because they used to do really well at your trivia.
That's true. Left of Sanity was the name that they played under. Best of luck. I know Harold is his name. He streams on Twitch under H-Bomb and Friends on Wednesday nights. So I don't know or maybe it's during the day. You can check out his channel. He's always playing trivia on Thursday. Nice guy. No Nonsense Trivia. We'll see if we can get him doing some Nice Guys Trivia. But definitely check out his channel on Twitch. He does a lot of charity streams and stuff like that.
She was telling me about a moment when she was playing your trivia where boating was, I think, the last question. And, you know, you had done your whole telling everybody what all the things were going to be. So she went and read about boating. Mm-hmm. And one of your questions was, what is the French word or the Spanish word for ship or something like that? Mm-hmm. And she did. Do you remember this?
No. I could look it up, though.
She said for some reason she had this feeling it was like Pan or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I think I read this and we have nothing else, so we should just put that. And they were like, all right, like we have no other clue, so we're just going to go ahead and put it. And it ended up being right, just sitting in the recesses of her mind from her like going and hardcore crunching, you know, which is, I think we had talked about.
I found it here.
Okay.
I found the question. This is from July 19th, 2019. The question was, although you'd use the call term Mayday to indicate that you or your boat is in immediate danger, what call term of French origin would you use to indicate that you or your boat may be in jeopardy, but no immediate danger exists, such as the case of a breakdown or mechanical failure? And the answer is Pan.
Somehow she like dug deep inside from, you know, crunching Wikipedia or something. I don't know what she did, but she got it. And she said, she hollered so loud, there was a kid at the other table just kind of like staring at his spaghetti or whatever. And this kid almost fucking jumped out of his skin. She was just like, yeah, like freaked out. Just could not believe it.
That might have been, it's all coming back to me now. I think there was a team there that night or around there where there was a team that was named I Just Want to Eat Dinner. And I asked them about it, and the parents were like, that's our son's idea for the team name.
Jesus. Yeah, great.
Well, if you'd like to play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesdays, you can do so at 8 p.m. Just find the Zoom link in the description of this episode or on the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page. And if you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/No Nonsense Trivia, where we are streaming live on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us. Won't you
Lee?
Mark?
I want to play trivia.
Well, let's just take a little break. And then That's exactly what we're going to do.
Okay.
Well, Mark, I've got a round full of questions about the big and small screens for you here.
Yeah, you know, last week you mentioned that you had a how did you put it? A masculine first round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you remember what the categories were? Because I thought
the
categories
themselves weren't masculine, but I think all of the answers were masculine, if I remember correctly. So there's a little bit of a hint there for you.
See, I didn't really pick up on that until I was listening, mm-hmm. and then I was like, masculine, and then one of them was like...
I did kind of emphasize it when I said it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of them, I was listening back, I was like, that doesn't sound like a masculine thing, but that's fine.
Yeah, I think so. I might have been, I hope I didn't move a question around or something and make it unmasculine, and then it was just a mix, but perhaps I shouldn't have gendered the round at all, but I think I had written that in as a hint.
Yeah, it would be a very masculine thing to do to make a dumb move like that.
Absolutely.
Big and small screens, hit me.
Yes, movies is our first category. What 2007 film was directed by Joel Schumacher and follows the story of Walter Sparrow, a man who suffers from apophenia?
Well, I don't recognize the name Walter Sparrow. I'm not very good with, you know, like a lot of those people like Joel Schumacher or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling there's a lot of people who, like, I can imagine Justin Peterson being one of those people who's like, I know Joel Schumacher films.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not one of those guys.
You're more of an Amy Heckerling guy.
Wouldn't know who she is either. I do now. Clueless. Fast Times at mm-hmm. Ridgemont High.
That was her debut, right?
Look who's talking. Mm-hmm. Look who's talking to, and produced. Look who's talking now.
It's you, Mark.
And apparently had an affair with Chris Kattan for some reason. Or was...
Such as Mango.
Yes, such as Mango. She has a mango fetish. She goes to MangoCon. Apophenia.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you know what that is?
Trying to think of a movie. No, I don't. But, you know, this is another one of those times where I'm realizing, like, phenia as a suffix. I'm trying to think if it's the same as, like, quadrophenia, phenia. And what phenia means. Does it mean, like, madness? I think I'm going to go with, because I'm kind of thinking like Apocalypse maybe. And for some reason, the movie, that's sticking out of my mind is, Evan Almighty. I think it's Evan Almighty. Walter. Joel Schumacher, 2007. Walter Sparrow. It wouldn't be Evan Almighty then, huh? Because his name is Walter.
It'd be Walter Almighty.
Hi.
Do you want to know who played Walter Sparrow?
I mean, if you want to tell me, you know.
A man named James Carey.
Okay.
Little Jim.
It's Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Sparrow. That's too early for the cable guy. Oh. Is it the number 23, I wonder?
Yes, Mark, it is. The
number 23,
yes.
Okay.
I just realized, I was like, oh, I swung my arm around. I should commit to it here. Yes, Mark, the number 23, very good.
Okay.
Apophenia.
That's Joel Schumacher, huh?
Mm-hmm. It was their, I guess, their second movie together after Batman Forever. Right? Mm. Didn't he direct Batman, the third Batman movie?
That sounds right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And the number 23, apophenia is the tendency to mistakenly perceive connections and meanings between unrelated things. So seeing the number 23 everywhere
is
apophenia. And I want to apologize because on the Twitch trivia, we had a question recently about a like, I think the question that I had written was, what Jim Carrey movie or what, when, in what movie, which of these movies does somebody suffer from triskaidekaphobia, which is the fear of the number 13. So mm-hmm. I wrote the number 13 thinking that that was the condition and the name of the movie that Jim Carrey was in. Neither are true. He suffers from apophenia, not triskaidekaphobia. And the movie is called the number 23, not the number 13. So I just want to apologize. Because that one, I felt so confident writing out of my head that I didn't even look up anything about the movie or anything, and it was just totally wrong. But good for those of you that got that right and were right there with me in my mistake.
Yeah, that is, the triskaidekaphobia, like, that was the thing. I was kind of thinking in terms of, like, oh, it would be, like, a longer name or whatever, but... when you mentioned Jim Carrey in 2007, it seemed like the years lined up.
Very good, Mark.
Thank you. Here's your first question, a little World War I question.
Okay.
What country is believed to have experienced the most military and civilian deaths in World War I?
Hmm. I mean, I guess my first thought would be maybe it's Germany, because that created such, you know, a chip on their shoulder that created the situation that World War II grew out of. But it could be.
You mentioned, you're saying the situation you're talking, of course, about the guy from
the Hitler Jim guy.
Tan Laundry.
From what?
Oh, Jim Tan Laundry from Jersey Shore. The situation.
No, that's, I was talking about GTL. Okay. No, not that situation. I'm talking about the Holocaust and Hitler, you know, the situation.
Okay.
I don't know if that's I'm not sure where, if that's a history term, the situation. Anybody's used that to describe World War II.
The big situation.
Mm-hmm. It's known as the Great Situation.
Capital S situation, yes.
But I suppose it could be another country. My World War I history is knowledge is pretty sparse. Mm. Let's see here. I just watched The Sound of Music, which takes place in Austria, but that's World War II. I guess I'll go with Germany. I mean, that seems to make sense with my mental picture of the way that things shook out with the end of World War I. So I know they were forced to pay for a lot of things. That's really, I think, where the big frustration with the Germans experienced after World War I came from was the Treaty of Versailles. But I'm not sure if that equates to the most deaths. Germany is my answer.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. Total deaths in Germany ranged somewhere, of course, you know, it's hard to get an exact number, somewhere between 2,198,000 to 2,800,000. But there is one country with more deaths than that, with between 2,840,000 to 3,394,369 deaths. Russia experienced the most military and civilian casualties in World War One.
That makes sense.
A pretty crazy stat that I saw while looking at the article for World War One casualties. Serbia had 4.5 million people in Serbia between civilian and military casualties. They experienced somewhere between 750,000 and 1,250,000 deaths, which is 16.67 to 27.78% of their nation's people killed in World War One.
Damn. So almost one out of every three. Yeah, a quarter to a third.
A quarter of their fucking country wiped out. 27%. Over one out of four. Insane.
Yeah.
Insane. Very, very crazy.
Absolutely. Well, I have a TV question for you. A little bit more lighthearted.
Right. The smaller screen.
Exactly. What adult animated television series, which ran for 11 seasons from 2000 to 2015, was technically a spinoff of Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
Well, I think I know this.
Ooh, okay.
Can I get it one more time just to make sure?
What adult animated television series, which ran for 11 seasons from 2000 to 2015, was technically a spinoff of Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
Did you say 11 seasons from 2000 to 2015?
Mm-hmm.
A little baby seasons.
I mean, there was writer strikes in there. I think there was just some delays. Maybe it got brought back. I think that was, I'll double check the date there, but
2000 to 2015. Well, I mean,
let's see here. Yep.
Well, you know, initially, technically a spinoff. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, I need to slow my roll here. Okay, so initially my thought was the Brack Show. But I don't know if the Brack Show was around that long. I don't think it was. And then there's Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. He was a character that was in Space Ghost. But not many people know. Not many people know, but I do. Not many people know that the characters from Aqua Teen Hunger Force were originally on, a very bastardized version of them, were originally on Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Completely different Frylock. That I remember just, and I bet you this is where you got this from too, maybe, is I just saw a meme that was one of those, the Confederacy was only around this long and Space Ghost and Aqua Teen Hunger Force was around this long, which means Aqua Teen Hunger Force is more of a part of our world than the Confederacy was. So I think I'm going to, man, I almost just ran with the Brack Show without thinking about the length of time. I'm going to go with Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Very good, Mark. Very good. Yes, you sussed it perfectly. Well, almost perfectly. Yeah, they were on Space Ghost Coast to Coast. They were conceived as characters, the Aqua Teens, in the writer's room of Space Ghost, but they didn't actually appear on the show until 2 years after they had their own show. So it's even more bizarre that they were totally different. But yeah, they just decided to roll with that as its own idea, started developing out the Aqua Teen. That's why it's technically a spinoff. But there is an episode that has a different origin on Space Ghost than they do have in their own show. Rather than being made by Dr. Weird, they're from like a New Jersey restaurant called the Burger Trench. And I think they're from a Baffler meal is how Zorak describes it. I did not see that meme, but very funny.
Yes.
Good meme.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. I was really thinking that's where you got it from. All right. Here is your second question. Isoptrophobia is the fear of what? Commonly seen in bathrooms.
Mm.
Would you like a spelling?
Yes. Thank you.
Isoptrophobia.
Sorry, one more time.
Isoptrophobia, and he's typing it into Google, and he's looking it up.
I'm typing it into a Google Doc. We don't have that. I don't have definitions coming up. Don't worry. I thought you were laughing because you had the same joke in your mind. You down with OTP? Yeah, you know me.
Oh, no, no, no. That's good, too.
Isoptrophobia is the fear of what? That is commonly seen in bathrooms?
Yes.
Let's see here. Isoptrophobia. 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 Well, let's see here. Toilets are a common thing seen in bathrooms. Sinks. Bathtubs, they're declining in popularity. I feel like 50-50 on the shower, no bathtub, and bathtub. But it is called a bathroom. So it could be bathtubs.
Bathtub is how you make a human soup.
And you said often seen?
Commonly seen.
Commonly seen. Okay, so bathtubs are commonly seen, I would say. I would not be surprised to see a bathtub in a bathroom.
What the hell is this thing doing in here?
Why would you be afraid of like a sink? How do you pronounce it again?
I pronounce it isoptrophobia.
Isoptrophobia. I sop delicious stew up with my toast.
Mm.
I was doing that last night at dinner. I was like, this is awesome.
Do you have a favorite bread?
Right now, Kyle's been making some slammin' sourdough. So, yeah, sourdough. It's got to be my answer right now. But I appreciate a good rye and, you know, French baguette, Cuban white bread, brioche. So many options, Mark.
Brioche is good.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the context, but.
Skylar tagged me in a meme about rye, Rye Till I Die. Mm-hmm. I love rye. I don't get enough of it.
You're a rough rider.
I am, yes.
Mm-hmm. Isoptrophobia, the fear of sinks, the fear of toilets, the fear of showers, the fear of bathtubs. These seem to be the obvious ones. I would guess. I'm going to go with toilets. Maybe this is somebody who can't stand the Facebook page Toilets with Threatening Auras. Maybe perhaps they suffer from isoptrophobia.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The correct answer is mirrors. Mirrors.
How could I forget about mirrors? They are often seen in the bathroom.
Either mirrors or even seeing your own reflection is isoptrophobia.
Okay. So narcissists does not suffer from isoptrophobia.
No, they have unisoptrophobia, I guess.
But vampires, probably not big into mirrors. Maybe a little bit. I don't know if that's...
They can't see themselves, can they?
Right. So maybe it just makes them, you know, they just... I don't know if it's a fear thing. But I certainly wouldn't want to be a vampire and be around a mirror when other people are around, because then, boom, you're not seen in the mirror. Dead giveaway, stake through the heart, you're done.
Right.
That might produce a little sense of isoptrophobia, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, my last question for this first round for you is a movie musicals question.
Okay, movie musicals.
What band stars in the musical comedy film Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band? What's up?
What kind of trick question is this? I mean, to be honest with you, I've never seen... What band stars in the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band?
The musical comedy film.
Okay, the musical comedy film. I don't know. I mean, at first I was thinking the Beatles. Because, you know, obviously. And if that's the answer, I'll be very angry. And then I was thinking... Well, it's Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. For those unfamiliar with the album, you should definitely be familiar with it. And you can start by telling your wife that. it is bookended.
I've quizzed her a little bit. She seems to have listened to the Beatles and given them a fair shake at one point. But yeah, I'm the Beatles fan in the house, and she takes a pass on them. Which is, you know,
the whole concept of the album was for them to be able to act like they were a different band other than the Beatles, to be able to write stuff outside of their comfort zone. And they were supposed to, I believe, actually release the album not under the Beatles moniker. But when they started doing it, they were like, we're just going to release this as the Beatles. And that's definitely when they started getting even more kind of out there. And it's bookended, not bookended. begins with and almost ends with, except for, I believe, Just a Day in the Life with the little Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band song.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a reprise.
Mm-hmm. That's the other end of the bookend. Mm-hmm.
Yep. The second book.
And then, of course, there's A Day in the Life, which is maybe my favorite Beatles song.
Yeah, a great closing track for an album. Oof, maybe sets the standard for a closing track.
That last piano note. Three pianos recorded at once to make that chord.
Hmm. Beatles trivia.
Yeah, there you go. The name of the band for this musical, I can't stand a lot of Beatles adjacent stuff. I didn't like that movie that used all the Beatles references in it.
Yesterday?
No.
Across the Universe?
Yes.
Did you see Yesterday?
No. I wanted to. Maybe I'll watch it today. Who knows? I've got band practice, so we'll see how it goes. But
just put it on during band practice.
Just listen to it during band practice.
Play along with the movie.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, I don't really know. So I'm just going to say.
Do you want the year? Because I thought you would know this right away. So I changed it up at the last second and took the year that the movie came out.
Oh, okay.
All right. 1978.
Can I hear the question again?
Sure. This is in the original form. What band stars in the 1978 musical comedy film Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band?
It always skeeves me out when you think I would know something right away and I feel clueless. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band musical. Like, I don't even know if I know this musical comedy. I mean, is it an actual band?
Yes, it's a real life band that stars in this movie.
I have no idea. And you thought the year was going to help me. 1978. A musical comedy, a band that would be in a Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band musical comedy in 1978 that would star in it. That isn't the Beatles.
Do you want some other bands that appeared in it that weren't leads, but they make appearances?
No, I'll just guess. Okay. Someone, and then you can give me that as information.
Cool.
I'll go with, I'm going to go with Pink Floyd.
No, Mark, I'm sorry. Hmm. Almost went 3 for 3. It's not Pink Floyd. I don't think they appear in it either, but it does feature appearances by Earth, Wind and Fire, Alice Cooper, Aerosmith, Peter Frampton, and even Steve Martin. Ringing any bells?
Mm-mm.
The answer is the Bee Gees.
Really?
Have you never seen this movie or heard about it?
No.
Oh, yeah. So it is an ensemble musical comedy that stars the Bee Gees. And they are they play three brothers, Bob, Dave, and Mike or something along those lines. They have some Bob, Dave, and Mike Henderson or something like that. Very generic names. Okay. And they are recruited to play Sergeant Pepper's music. So it does have kind of this like fantastical quality that some of these newer movies like Across the Universe and Yesterday have. But the Bee Gees star it in it. So their name's Gibb. Shouldn't it be the GBs?
The Brothers Gibb is what it stands for.
I was thinking so like if they went with GBs, then that could be like, you know, the Heebie GBs nightclub in New York. There we go. I was like, is he going to miss it?
Oh, no.
I saw you looking at your phone.
I'm with you. I'm queuing up for you.
Yep.
All right. You ready for your last question this round?
Oh, yeah.
Vincent Furnier is better known by what stage name? Singer Vincent Furnier is better known by what stage name?
Vincent Furnier. Singer Vincent Furnier is known, not was known. Is known. One of these days, the answer is going to be Michael Bublé, because that is not a real name. But I don't know if he's Vincent Furnier. Vine plant. This method is not working.
This is not working.
This is so getting me nowhere.
Do you want me to give you a clue?
Please.
Considered by music journalists and peers to be, quote, the godfather of shock rock.
Okay. The godfather of shock rock. Vincent Furnier. Well, now I'm thinking Alice Cooper, because I think Manson. Manson always seems to me like a mix of Alice Cooper and David Bowie. There's just like that kind of goth performance energy. I mean, he clearly like made his own identity, you know, but when you think
maybe
of
a young
Brian Warner. Yeah, definitely some G.G. Allen, a young Brian Warner growing up in Fort Lauderdale, listening to Cooper and Bowie. That makes sense. I'm sure he's acknowledged as such. I know he's talked about Alice Cooper being inspirational. Vincent Furnier. Could it be golfer Alice Cooper? I think it could be. He's had a long career, and I think isn't there a video of him like as a crooner, like a young crooner version of Alice Cooper, maybe performed under Vincent Furnier?
Not sure.
The Godfather.
I haven't done a lot of Alice Cooper digging. I do remember his hit song Poison from the 1990s.
And Feed My Frankenstein from the Wayne's World soundtrack.
Ah, yes.
And School's Out.
School's Out, of course. Yes. No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Many hits.
Man-E hits.
Let's see here. The Godfather of Shock Rock. Vincent Furnier. See, so many things like that were considered shocking aren't. So like, but who would still, it's what people today would consider shocking. If they're talking about the Godfather, they're not talking about people getting upset over Elvis shaking his hips. It's not Elvis. Right. So there has to be some element of that. And I guess, yeah, I'm going to go with Alice Cooper.
Lee, that's correct. Alice Cooper.
Man, when you said I didn't do too much Alice Cooper digging, I was like, oh, what the fuck's going on here? He obviously knew this, but that doesn't mean that it's not the answer.
Well, it's very funny because I did ask that question last night. And then you mentioned Alice Cooper as being on the Magical or the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band thing.
Yeah, Magical Mystery Tour is their movie. Question. The Beatles were in that one.
Yes. Yeah. I also learned yesterday that none of the Beatles voice themselves in the Yellow Submarine movie.
Oh,
they only
really?
They only have anything to do with it when they do a live appearance right at the end of the movie.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. So it's just some other actors doing impressions of them?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow. Imagine that. Imagine like if they made a no-nonsense trivia movie and they just hired actors to play you and me. Because it was animated.
Imagine dragons.
If you will. All right, Mark.
Break?
Let's do it. let's take a break, and then we've got some miscorrections.
Ooh.
Okay, Mark. Got some miscorrections. All right. First up, we have one from Elise in our Facebook group. Elise writes, the lightning bolt on Bowie's face was from Aladdin Sane, not Ziggy Stardust. She didn't clarify. Did you say that or did I? Or
I did.
Okay. And then it would be a post complete from Elise without a mention of the dogs. I've made the same mistake even when describing my tattoo of my former dog, where she has the same makeup as he does. As from Aladdin Sane. So don't call that the Ziggy Stardust David Bowie, says Elise. And then we have a note here from Aaron Dyer. Aaron writes, good morning, Quiz Daddies. I'm so sad that I'm caught up and can't just listen nonstop. However, I get to send miscorrections and no notes now. So this is our first one here from Aaron. In today's episode, you were talking about oxygen, and Mark said there's regular oxygen, then there's O2, then there's this, ozone. While you're not totally wrong, oxygen is a diatomic element. Diatomic. And I had to look that up. That means two atoms. So regular oxygen gas is technically already O2. The element oxygen, when bonded, isn't always two, but the quote, regular oxygen gas is. Keep up the fantastic work, guys. Just know that I listen on Google Podcasts, so I can't rate you, but you'll always be 5 stars in my heart. Thanks, Aaron.
That is very interesting and also very helpful. Thank you.
Yes. Diatomic element oxygen is.
Diatomic.
If you'd like to write us with a missed correction, as Elise and Aaron did, or a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media.
Are you ready for the second round?
Yes. A question, if you wouldn't mind.
A question for your time. I'm going to give you an art one that I think you're going to know.
Okay, here comes the jinx. We'll see.
Artist, no, I think you're, I have a feeling you're going to know this. Artist Marcel Duchamp submitted the ready-made art piece Fountain in 1917, which was what item reoriented 90 degrees?
So I believe that this would be another object that is found in the bathroom commonly. Is the answer a urinal, Mark? I know that Duchamp did a urinal piece. Is this that piece?
It is that piece. That is correct.
90 degrees. So
90 degrees,
you know, put your face in it. Basically, is what
basically
saying.
Laying on its back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was, one of the Dadaists, the original Dadaisters. I don't know what the term for them is. Dadaists?
Dadaisters? I think Dadaists, yeah.
Dada daddies?
Yes. Along with the likes of Tristan Zara and Hans Arp.
Yep. And they were art pranksters.
Yeah, anti-artists. Mm-hmm. I've found myself getting into a bunch of art conversations lately, not unlike the ones that you and I used to have. As a matter of fact, there's one I want to talk to you about off mic a little bit later. But I learned about Dadaism through our mutual friend, Mike Mitchell, and kind of sank deep into it. Very, very interesting to me how it was supposed to be an anti-art movement that basically became a giant art movement. You know, the Fountain was considered, it was voted the most influential artwork of the 20th century by 500 selected British art world professionals. The third most important or influential was the Marilyn Monroe art piece, done by Andy Warhol. And I think the second most influential was, I can't remember what it was, but it was some like art. But it's pretty interesting that this thing that was basically just like a urinal turned on its side and signed R. Mutt was considered the most, you know, influential artwork of the 20th century, basically, mm-hmm. you know, kickstarting the avant-garde movement and separating art from meaning.
Right.
Very, very interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, there's still some like of that flavor going on in the modern art world, like specifically when like Banksy shredded his art after it was purchased, you know, it was yeah. like a self destructing piece of artwork. I think that is pretty close to having like a Dadaist postmodern ideal in the art world.
The banana tape to a wall in mm-hmm. Art Basel in Miami.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I think that the person who paid whatever six figures or whatever for it and then just ate it mm-hmm. is, you know, just as much an art piece as, you know, the painting, you know, the putting the banana on the wall itself, you know.
Yeah.
It's,
it requires a certain degree of authenticity and lack of bullshit that is present throughout the art world. Commonplace.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and to an extent, a lot of it is bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's
and I'm saying that as an artist.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much a snake eating its own head. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's taking everybody for a ride, which is kind of like the world at large, I think, in large part. But I digress.
Hollywood legends, Mark, is your category here. What cigar-smoking star of stage, radio, and film, whose career lasted for over three-quarter of a century, and who died in 1996, shortly after their 100th birthday, was the subject of a one-man play titled Goodnight Gracie?
Oh, am I gonna get this guy's fucking name wrong? Fuck. What's his name? This is one of those things. This is a thing. This is a thing. I know his name. I know I know this. I can't remember it.
Perfect.
Yeah, this is the thing you want.
The tip of the tongue.
I initially wanted to say Milton Berle, but it's not him. Say goodnight, Gracie. Goodnight, Gracie. Oh, you old fuck. You can put some Jeopardy music behind me here because I really need to dig deep. George Burns is my final answer, I believe.
George Burns. I did not mean to hit Whoa. The wrong one. No, that was.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
I fast fingered it. Sorry. Yep.
George Burns.
George Burns. Yes. And Gracie would be Gracie Allen, his wife and comedic partner. She actually never said goodnight, Gracie. She would just say goodnight.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. So but it was parodied as goodnight, Gracie several times, thereby putting it in the pop culture zeitgeist. But yes, George Burns is the answer. Cigar smoking star of stage, radio and film. Career lasted for over three quarters of a century, and he died after his 100th birthday. Actually, at the age of 96, he signed a lifelong performing contract with Caesar's Palace that included a show on his 100th birthday. Imagine being 96 and signing a lifetime contract.
Like, yeah, seriously.
He's going to ride this out here. But unfortunately, when his 100th birthday, or I guess fortunately for him, he just didn't end up performing. He wasn't up for it. He ended up dying just a couple months after that. But George Burns. Yep.
All right. here's your next question. What gas is used for the inflation of airbags?
Hmm.
I like this question.
Yeah. It's a good question. Maybe it's ozone. Just take that bottled lightning, you know? Lightning in a bottle. Mm-hmm. Literally. Get that ozone. Boom.
If I could save lightning in a bottle.
And put it in my airbag.
The first thing that I'd like to do is blow up an airbag and save the lives of everyone in this car except you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how airbags work. But they have to inflate somehow.
There is a sensor mm-hmm. on the outside. Like, a lot of people think that something inside the car is what pops the airbag out. But I don't believe that's the case. It's usually on the outside of the car. A sensor goes off. When that sensor goes off, it causes this gas to fill
mm-hmm.
this bag, popping off your center part of your steering wheel there.
Hopefully not hitting you in the face.
Probably will.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen airbag injuries, but they are not pretty, but they're better than dying.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, you can take from that a side-by-side comparison with masks, if you will, if you wish, that, you know,
a little inconvenience is better.
Might not be pleasant, but it's better than the possibility of the extreme.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what gas inflates? Well, could it be helium? Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't. Yeah, I mean.
Oh no, danger! Oh, I gotta explode! I'm gonna save you.
Did you remember Strindberg and Helium cartoons?
Yes. Oh, Helium.
Put one of those in the fucking show notes. Oh, Helium. Life is pain.
Pain. Suffering.
Oh. Gold.
Let's see here. Yeah, that's some I don't want to call that early internet, but pre-YouTube meme.
Yeah.
I can't believe you remember the name. That's a good trivia question. Strindberg and Helium.
Strindberg. Yes, August Strindberg and Helium.
Hmm. I don't know. Gases, you know. Neon, it's probably not neon gas. Xenon gas. Cool. These are all like heavy gases, right? Helium is light. My gases, I do not know my gases. So I'm gonna go with helium.
I'm sorry, that's it. What if I told you it was the same gas that is used in potato chip bags to prevent oxidization?
Is it, it's not nitrogen.
The correct answer is nitrogen.
Okay. Huh. That
was originally going to be the question. And when I looked up nitrogen to double check it, mm-hmm. I saw that nitrogen was used for airbags. And I was like, that's more interesting.
Yeah, you're right. Good on you for going with that. So thank now you. those funny little videos of popcorn coming out of an airbag, car airbag, that just makes the popcorn seem that much more crispy in my mind.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it will not yellow or brown.
Mark, it's been a while since we had a question about an African country that wasn't Namibia. A while. So
since I said I'm sorry. Yeah, give me some African country stuff I can get wrong, but at least learn a little bit about Africa every day.
What African country contains the Oklo region, where the world's only known naturally occurring nuclear reactor was first discovered in 1976?
Wait, first discovered?
Yes. A naturally occurring nuclear reactor first discovered in 1976. The Earth made this thing.
You're doing that weird thing. You're doing a weird thing.
What do you mean?
It's not a real nuclear reactor.
No, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a freakish coincidence of science and nature. Which I can give you some more information about, but
No.
I will later after the answer.
That's what you always say.
But this is
you
not
need to make that for your Twitch. You need to make a thing of you going, no.
An emote.
Yes.
I was trying to think of new emotes the other day, and I was like thinking like one that's like, this is my question. If you like a question or so, I don't know.
No.
Send in some emote advice. No.
Please give us emote advice. Yeah, John, it's funny, you and John knowing each other for so long. John is good. Mm-hmm. You are no. You both
the yin
say
and the
things
yang.
In triplet. And yeah, and there's a yin and a yang, yes.
Accurate.
Okay, country in Africa, natural occurring, da-da-da-da-da. Just guess a country in Africa, I guess. I am going to go with Zimbabwe.
No, it's not Zimbabwe. It is okay. North of Zimbabwe, Gabon. Or Gabon.
Oh,
in the
Gabon.
In the Munana town, the village of Munana. Basically, it used to be a French territory, and France was mining uranium in the region to bring back to Europe for energy production. But they noticed when they were digging up some of the uranium that it seemed depleted, as if it had already been in a reactor before. So they did some more scientific investigation and found that a swelling of groundwater reacting to fissive material created a natural nuclear reactor. So it would like bubble up around the uranium, and then the heat from the fissive material would evaporate and push back the groundwater, and it would cycle like this, creating nuclear energy. This all happened about 1.7 to 1.8 billion years ago. But yes, the world's only known naturally occurring nuclear reactor, first discovered in 1976 in Gabon.
Fissive mm-hmm. is a very cool word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it. Do I have one more question?
Yes.
Okay, because I keep losing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you got one more than me.
You know me. Oh, Jesus. Holy cow. All right. Here is your final question of the second round. According to geologists, how many eons has Earth experienced so far, including now?
I think it's a relatively low number. Not sure if there's like a concrete definition of an eon, like, oh, it's every, 10,000 years. I think it's more loose than that, like separated out by maybe different ages and states.
So there is a definition of eon in one sense of the word, not in this sense. Mm-hmm. An eon is a billion years.
Okay.
But in this, I think it is broken up into like
periods
defined
ages.
by, a bunch of important stuff happened here.
Right. This is the Neolithic era. It's part of the first eon
right.
or something like that. I think it's a relatively low number. I think it's under 10. I want to say as even low as 3. But it could be more.
Sounds like Name That Tune.
Yeah, I'm listening to my Mind Palace right now. Maybe it's more, though. 3 eons, that just seems really low. I'm going to go with 5. 5 is kind of a meet in the middle of the range of where my brain is guessing.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The correct answer is 4.
Okay.
So there is the Hadean,
mm-hmm.
which was the first one, the Archean, which was the second, Proterozoic. And those three eons are all what is considered the Precambrian super eon. Mm-hmm. Now, some people consider this its own eon, but I think most geologists refer to this as three separate eons that make up one super eon. Mm-hmm. And then the one that we are currently in is the Phanerozoic.
Right. And that's the one with Jesus in it, right?
Yeah, Jesus and animals and such. Mm-hmm.
So Precambrian, that's just like formation of the earth, post-formation of the earth, the soup and all that stuff. Or is there any life in those three?
Oh yeah,
eras?
Yeah,
okay,
there's
okay.
life.
Gotcha.
Little critters fucking crawling around and shit, etc.
All right. Well, starting we're gonna bring it life. Back to the 20th century here, U.S. history.
Bring it on back.
Inspired by Christian symbolism in the poetry of John Donne, J. Robert Oppenheimer suggested what code name for the first U.S. nuclear bomb test, which took place on July 16th, 1945, just a little over 75 years ago.
One more time.
Inspired by Christian symbolism in the poetry of John Donne, J. Robert Oppenheimer suggested what code name for the first U.S. nuclear bomb test, which took place on July 16th, 1945.
Christian symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
The name for the first U.S. bomb test.
Yeah, it was the code name.
Christian symbolism. I can't really think of anything, and I can't think of... I don't know if I know what it was called. I know they did tests in like the Bikini Atoll, but I don't know of any. I don't know of any of the names. I'm thinking of Christian symbolism. You know, knowing them, it was probably something fucking super self-righteous, like, oh, this is you know, I don't know. I'm gonna say Operation Shepherd.
No, Mark, that's incorrect. The line from which it's taken is or inspired from is from the Holy Sonnets. The line is, batter my heart, three-personed God. The answer is Trinity. Trinity.
Oh, mm-hmm. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spigot. Spirit.
What movie is that from?
I don't know.
Four Weddings and a Funeral?
That might be. I think that might be.
It's not...
Someone British says it.
Yeah. Rowan Atkinson?
Is it him?
I think it's him. I think it's in that movie. You know,
someone was just saying his daughter's really attractive.
The daughter of Atkinson? The daughter Atkinson?
The daughter's Atkinson.
Someone says the daughter Atkinson is most attractive.
Yeah, I've read on the internet. I mean, not to say that he's like disgusting looking, but he's not. She's pretty. Holy cow. He's a good looking guy, too.
Well, I think, you know, comedians are inclined to, you know, present themselves in comedic manners a lot of the time.
Well, I mean,
he's probably not walking around looking like Mr. Bean all the time. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah, his you son of a bitch. His eyebrows are very intense. But when he's dressed up looking pretty dapper, I don't know if you can see.
Yeah, he looks like. You know, he's got that look like the guy that you wouldn't expect is worth $1 billion. Then you meet him, he's like, oh, I'm actually a billionaire.
He kind of has a Dudley Moore look about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like like a cross between Dudley Moore and what's his name? The guy who did the country album.
Rick Moranis.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kid. Yeah. He's kind of unassuming.
You're like the guy that did the country album. It's like, oh yeah, Rick Moranis. He's the guy that did.
This is why. Not Billy Ray Cyrus. No. You knew where I was going.
Yes. Okay. So, Trinity is the answer. Yes. Taken from. Okay. Oppenheimer seems like he was particularly well read. He was always quoting, you know, old Hindu scripts. I am become death. So he was the name guy, I guess. He was the idea guy and the name guy. Oppenheimer, what do you got here? Trinity. Batter my heart, three-personed God.
God. Yeah, very intense, very self-important.
All right, so that's 1, 2. Let's complete our own Trinity with a third round after we take a little break.
Sounds good.
So, Mark, before we get into our own questions, we do have a pair of Rate My Questions here from Adele.
Rate My Question. Did we screw up the one earlier?
Yeah, we did. I think we did the Rate My Question music earlier.
That's what I thought. And then when we were going to do this, I was like, wait a minute, I want to sing the wrong theme. Okay. Yep.
We should have done. Yep. You get the idea.
You know.
Different theme, know our theme. Same segment. You know where it goes. We're not moving them around or anything.
Quarantine has made us completely lose our fucking minds. Yeah. So.
Yep. All right. Adele writes.
As you just hit your microphone. Look.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit anymore. Mouth noises. No, be damned.
Adele writes, "Hi, Lee and Mark. It's Adele again. This is my first time participating in the Rate My Question segment. Below are two questions. I made a regular, easier, and easiest version of each, separated by plenty of space. At the very bottom are links to the answers. I included geography since you guys are hilariously bad at it. Thanks a lot, Adele." And she says, "No, the answer is not Namibia. Enjoy." So there are three versions here of two categories. We have a geography question / topography and animals. Mark, which of these do you think we should tackle first?
Well, let's go with topography or whatever, because that one's going to be harder.
Okay. Standing at 8,611 meters high, K2 is the second highest peak on Earth. K2 is a part of which sub-Himalayan mountain range? I was going to say the Himalayas, but it says sub-Himalayan mountain range. So, I don't know. Any thoughts? It's not the Alps.
The Alps were my guess.
I think that's
a different thing altogether.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a great question.
The Himalayas are over by India, right?
Yeah, I think so. And the Alps are in Europe.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. K2. Tough fucking question.
The sub-Himalayan mountain range. Himalaya Junior. Himalaya Pequeña.
Himalayan who?
Do you want to move to the easier version of this?
Yeah,
I guess
please.
There's an easiest. Yes. Okay, this is the easier version.
Something. Okay.
Standing at 8,611 meters high, K2 is the second highest peak on Earth. K2 is a part of what sub-Himalayan mountain range whose name means black gravel in Turkish? This is easier.
Well, I mean, it does give you more of a hint. Mm-hmm. If you have anybody on your team that is from Turkey,
mm-hmm. or speaks Turkish,
well, it seems like in a lot of places, black almost always starts with N, like Negro, you know, something like that. I don't know if that's like exclusively the way it is around the world.
Well, Turkish is Turkish like a Latin language? I feel like Negro is in a lot of Latin derived languages like Spanish.
No, you're right. What that Black Pete guy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Norwegian Santa's helper character. Mm-hmm.
Is it, do you remember what his name is?
Mm-mm. I thought it was something like Black Pete.
Well, I was trying to think of
like a native name.
What his name is, like in, yeah, like Sinterklaas is, or Sinterklaas is.
Well, I don't know that that's, it's going to be, so because that's another European.
Yeah, I know.
It's like probably Germanic. This is probably Arabic. Yeah, so I think if I remember correctly, I might know one Turkish word, and it's teşekkürler. I think either means, it either means hello or thank you. I think it's a greeting, though.
Great.
So that's something, you know, the teşekkürler mountain range. This is literally all I have. Black gravel, it does not help. I hope
the easiest version of this question is just, it's fucking this answer.
Yeah, like, we need even more help. So should we go on to the easiest?
Yeah. Oh God, we're trivia hosts.
Okay, teşekkürler means thank you. I just had to look it up.
Okay.
Yeah. So the thank you mountains. No. Here's the easiest version. Standing at 8,611 meters high, K2 is the second highest peak on Earth. K2 is part of what sub-Himalayan mountain range, beginning with K and meaning black gravel in Turkish? It's the same thing.
No, beginning with K.
Ah, yes. Okay, there is, yeah.
Sub-Himalayan. So this is kind of like, it just keeps adding information.
Now, K2, that makes sense, because K2, K1, it probably is named K because it's named after, they're labeled K because it's after the mountain range, right?
I guess. I never thought about it.
Like Kilimanjaro 1, Kilimanjaro 2.
Could it be Kilimanjaro? No, that's just one mountain.
I was going to say, I think that's just one mountain. But maybe it's named after, the range is named after the biggest one.
Maybe.
Black gravel. Could that be Kilimanjaro?
Could be.
Should we go with it? We have no other answer. Sure.
Yeah, let's go with it. Let's go with Kilimanjaro. It starts with a okay. K.
Let's see here. I'm going to try and slowly reveal the first answer. Oh, there's a link.
Intensely.
Adele has perfect formatting here for Rate My Question.
And while you're looking this answer up, I just wanted to say it's got to be so funny, like doing this while people are catching up, because we've had various people in the Facebook group writing about how, like, oh, I'm getting caught up, and knowing that we've in real time seen them saying stuff, and we've talked about people catching up, and they're eventually going to get to this stuff now, mm-hmm. is very, very funny to me. Like that, like. They're writing stuff kind of like in the past, and they're going to get to this and be like, oh man, while I was listening on episode like 101, mm-hmm. here on episode 108, we're talking about, you know, the present tense and the present times. It's very funny to me for some reason. Time is weird.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mark, but it looks like we're wrong.
Big shock.
The answer is Karakoram, the Karakoram range. It is okay. The highest point in both Pakistan and Xinjiang, that's K2. But yeah, the Karakoram range.
Did you say Xinjiang?
Xinjiang?
Isn't that a character from Silicon Valley?
Is it?
I think that's the name of the guy that lives at the incubator with Richard Hendricks and all them.
Hold on.
He's the the Asian guy that lives there, Jin Yang.
Yes, spelled differently.
Okay.
Yes, it's probably Xinjiang. It's X. It starts with an X.
Oh, okay.
You know my pronunciation here.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Let's see here.
I wonder if that was done on purpose as a little nod to, because he's such a high peak. Such a precipice.
The Karakoram is a mountain range spanning the borders of India, Pakistan, and China, with the northwest extremity of the range extending to Afghanistan and Tajikistan. So, five countries, the Karakoram range touches.
Great question. Hard question. All forms of them.
It's hard, but yeah, I mean, I think the acknowledgement of the different levels is good. I don't know. I don't know that they're... I don't know if it's just because we didn't know any of those hints. It didn't really help us at all. So I'm not sure. I guess, you know, the amount that you get for each one is like, do you have somebody that knows Turkish on your team? They would know this. And then the other one is straight up just telling you the starting letter of the answer. So,
yeah, but I mean, you know, I mean, I guess you can be picky about the kind of hints you want, but a hint is a hint.
Absolutely.
You know,
I'm not besmirching the hint, but, you know, I'm just looking at this question from like, you know, a rating standpoint.
Yeah,
I think it's a great question and all the different versions are good. I don't know that the hints enhance it in any way, like in the flavor context necessarily. Well, the Turkish one does. Because it gives you kind of a second avenue to go in. But I'm not sure how many people are going to say like, oh, it starts with K and then go Karakoram. Well, they would probably go with Kilimanjaro like we did, you know, if they don't know.
Yeah. I think that the middle form of it is the one that I like the most.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely like in my trivia it would be an 8-pointer. I don't think a lot of people know Karakoram, but I think that that's, you know, I think it's a really well worded question and it's interesting. You find out, you know, like I was saying last night to a friend of mine at the very end, like I've said at my trivia bunch, at the very least, you want people to walk out knowing something, you know. I will probably now, hopefully, remember for a long time, Karakoram, and that it means black gravel in Turkish. And that's, you know, an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you may not get it, but, you know, that, you know, some of the highest points in the world, that's something that people should know. That's an interesting trivia thing. This is not like, you know, this isn't some kind of weird bullshit, you know, side weird trivia thing like, oh, what's the slipperiest surface in Botswana? It's like, we're talking out of all the high places in the world, what mountain range is fucking K2? And everybody knows K2. So, you know, it's like kind of feeding you a little bit of information about something that you sort of kind of should know as someone who's like an avid trivia player. And, you know, I think it's awesome because Adele also had asked us about how to become a trivia like quizmaster, and it's clear that she has taken some of, you know, what we've talked about on the podcast, especially with regards to how you write questions where you're giving multiple pieces of information.
Mm-hmm.
Giving the K, I agree with you. I think it's a little too like on the nose, like, okay, what 7-letter word or starting with this? Sometimes you have to do that if you know there's like multiple possibilities for an answer, which is not the case here.
Mm-hmm.
So the beginning with K, eh. But the middle one where it's like, you know, where it's asking you, K2 is this huge thing. What mountain range is it in? And you're like, I'm a ding dong. But yeah, I would give it an A+.
I agree. Second version of this, the middle version, I would say A+ on that as well.
Can't wait for the other one.
Animals is the category. The cephalofoil is the scientific name for the head of what aquatic animal? The cephalofoil is the scientific name for the head of what aquatic animal?
For the head of it?
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking?
Well, I knew I'd heard cephalofoil somewhere, and it got me thinking, what's a cephalopod? I know I've heard cephalopod before. And I think if you're thinking about aquatic animals that have kind of unique heads, the squid has a very unique head that looks like it's like maybe segmented from its body and deserves its own term. You know, like I think a octopus might also be a cephalopod, but the head is not as segmented from the body there, you know, like the cephalofoil. Yeah. I think it might even be like a hard external like thing, you know, that's like on top of its head. So that would be my guess, is squid.
I think that's a really good guess. Cephalopod. How is it spelled? C-E-P-H-A-L.
Uh-huh.
Cephala-A.
Low pod.
Cephalo.
Mm-hmm. Or, well, I have cephalofoil here.
So F-O-I-L?
Mm-hmm. So like a wrapping, a foil?
Mm-hmm. Cephalofoil. That's interesting. When I heard foil, it made me think fake, like to foil someone.
Mm.
But I think I'm just looking too into it. So let's stick with squid, but let's check out the middle version.
Okay. Well, this changes things, I think. Maybe.
Mm.
The cephalofoil is a scientific name for the head of which aquatic animal whose common name includes a household tool? Okay.
Hammerhead shark.
That's what I was thinking too. Hammerheaded. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Should we go with the easier one now?
Take a look at it. Let's take a second. Because I'm just trying to think like if man, I know the term cephalopod. I'm just trying to think if there's some other like
maybe it's a shark. Maybe a cephalopod is a shark. Maybe it's not a squid. Squid is not a household tool. So
no, but I was trying to think if there was like, you know, they have like a box jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. If there was like some other form of something that, you know, could be where you'd think.
Right.
Hammerhead shark.
Mm-hmm.
The
measuring stick lobster.
Of course, the crescent wrench crab. Yeah, I can't imagine it being any easier than that. Because it seems like hammer, like a tool in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's go ahead with the easiest. Let's see what that gives us.
Oh, wait, that is the easiest. I must have skipped one.
Oh, you son of a bitch. What have you done?
Okay, so the first version did not have aquatic animal in it. That's what it was. What animal? My bad. I messed this up.
Yep. Okay.
So the household tool one, you're right. How do you get easier than that?
You don't.
Yeah, yeah. That is the easiest version of this. My bad. Sorry, Adele.
Okay.
So yeah. And the answer is hidden here at the bottom. So are we going with hammerhead shark?
Yes, we are.
The function and evolution of the hammerhead shark is where the link goes to.
Yeah. So what was the second version of the question?
The second version added aquatic. The original version should have just said it's the head of what animal? The cephalofoil is the scientific name for the head of what animal?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I didn't put much emphasis on head at first. Like it's got to be a specific head or like a weird head.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of my mistake, I think. When we went to aquatic first, it definitely narrows the selection down, you know.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know how things would have gone if we got it in the that context. But trivia doesn't work that way anyway. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We've talked, actually, you and I have talked about doing something like this as a segment or something, either on Patreon or on this, where we have multiple versions. So it's very funny that Adele sent things like this.
Yeah.
Where it'd basically be like a countdown where it's like you've got a hard version, if you can't answer that, a middle and an easier, like which one, where can you answer?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I would say the again, the middle, I think, is kind of the sweet spot.
Yep.
The first one is really, really hard. You know, it's like the Goldilocks. Mm-hmm. The middle one's too hard. The easy one's maybe too easy. Or the first one's too hard. The last one's too easy. The middle one's just right. I'd give it an A+.
So, but it does say, you know, call to mind in the live environment, sometimes you do want a super easy version. Like if this is your first question of the night, maybe you do want to include that household tool in there just to kind of break the ice with your players. So there could be a time and place for it. But yeah, in the range, you know, if I was just kind of putting this out to my regular players who I know, you know, everybody in here has played before, I would go with the middle one.
Yeah, I had some easy questions last night. I thought of you. I had some, I don't want to say gimmies, but I had some relatively easy ones. How many pawns does each player start with in a game of chess?
Mm-hmm. Which I think I got wrong on here.
Fair enough.
I think I got wrong on that question on the podcast.
I don't think it was pawns. Oh, maybe it was. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And what do you call ruling three strikes in a row in bowling?
Turkey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a couple of easier ones that almost every team got right. So it's nice to have a couple of gimmies. But these are good intermediate to hard ones. You know, these are if Adele is interested in becoming a quizmaster wherever she is.
I think she's on the right track.
She's on the right track for sure. Yep. Yeah, these are great questions.
And if you have a rate my question, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media.
That's 69.
96.
What? No, 69-66.
69-66.
There you go. You can't remember that phone number to save your life.
There's a lot of nines and a lot of sixes. I thought that would make it easier.
That's true. Yeah, right. All right. I'm ready. Okay. Give it to me.
Mythology is your final category.
Ah, shit.
In Egyptian mythology, what ibis-headed deity guards Ra's solar barge alongside his wife, Maat? In Egyptian mythology, what ibis-headed deity guards Ra's solar barge alongside his wife, Maat?
I probably know this somewhere deep inside. But I can't think of it. I'm going to go with I feel like I should know this. I can like picture it. I'm not much into like Egyptian stuff and all that. And I know I should be more into it. I know it's like good trivia fodder.
Plus it's interesting to see how old cultures thought of the world and their various creation myths too, you know,
how they thought
that the universe operated. Ra's solar barge, a giant ship that carries the sun across the sky, you know, and it's heralded by, you know, two other deities. One would be Maat and her husband, the ibis headed deity, which is who?
Tweety bird. I don't know, and I'm not going to stall anymore because I know that I'm just going to end up pooping out. I'm going to say, I feel like I should at least be able to come up with like a good guess, but I can't even do that. Xerxes. I have no idea.
No. It would be Thoth. Thoth is the answer.
Oh, I've seen that name before.
Thoth. Thoth.
It's a thought, but with an H on the end.
That Thoth over there. I saw in researching this a blog post, and I thought it was like going to be some analysis of Egyptian mythology. The website was called The Mask of God. And I start reading this article and it's like, is Reese Witherspoon the reincarnation of the Egyptian goddess Maat? She was sometimes depicted with wings. Here she is from this movie with a bird on her shoulder. And she married director Jim Toth. Toth? Thoth? They sound identical. And one is an actor, one's a director. They both work on opposite ends of the camera.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and that's when I abandoned ship on that website.
Yeah.
I had a good chuckle, though.
Get the fuck out of there. Here's your last question.
Mm-hmm.
With over 470 million copies in circulation in 43 countries worldwide, what is the best-selling manga of all time?
How many different languages?
43 different countries.
Oh, okay.
Worldwide.
Well,
it is in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most copies published for the same comic book series by a single author.
Well, if it was published in that many countries, so I was thinking like, you know, what's been around for a while that's been able to get some popularity. There was Astro Boy, but I think that might have even been more anime focused. I know it started as a manga. Dragon Ball, obviously a very popular cartoon that's based on a manga. But I'm wondering if it's something like Akira. You know, that is, I mean, that was a crazy popular manga that became a movie because the manga was so popular, basically. I know they're trying to make a live action movie that's been in development hell for over 10 years now. I used to follow it. I think Justin Timberlake was attached to lead in it at one point. But yeah, changed many versions since that iteration of it. That was about the same time when they were talking about making a sequel to the Jurassic Park movies and having dinosaurs with laser beams strapped to their backs and they went to space.
I want some sharks with some freaking laser beams.
They really were going to do that. And I feel like they're still going to do that. They're just working their way up.
Yeah. They're just starting all over again, starting from scratch. They really got something going with these velociraptors.
I'm telling you, they're going to put them in space next. There's going to be a Jurassic World. Jurassic Universe is what they're going to call it. And there's going to be spacefaring dinosaurs with Chris
Pratt. They got to wait till they get to 10, just like they did with Jason.
Chris Pratt is going to meet his Guardians of the Galaxy character, Star-Lord. And it's going to be the... They're... One's owned by Disney, the other Universal. They won't meet. Scratch that. Thank God.
They'll make it happen.
I'm going to go with Akira.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. This has generated more than $21 billion in total franchise revenue from the manga, anime, films, games, and merchandise. The correct answer is One Piece.
One Piece. The pirating Piece. Manga. Oh, man. I should have gotten that.
Been collected into 96 volumes since July 22nd, 1997.
Yep. Somewhat popular here in the States.
Monkey D. Luffy. Yes. One of my coworkers is obsessed with it.
Okay.
And yeah, just happened upon that little bit of information and thought it was pretty fascinating that it is as widely. One thing that I thought that was very interesting was so I did that as my end of second round wager. Mm-hmm. So, of course, question six, I told everybody the question number 12, the category will be manga. And almost everyone that wagered one did not know anything. Almost all of them put Naruto as their answer when they didn't know. And I didn't think that Naruto was so well known, was so ubiquitous, but apparently... you know, I thought a bunch of people would have put a Dragon Ball or something,
right?
But Naruto was the big guess.
I guess Akira is more critically acclaimed than popular.
I didn't think of Akira, and I don't know anything about manga, to be honest with you, or I don't know much. But I thought Akira was like a one-off thing, was just like a movie. Is that wrong?
It was a manga, and it had 6 volumes. So it was like it's a bit beefier than the movie is. The movie is like really an adaptation of the manga.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it doesn't make any sense in retro. Naruto is even a better guess, I would say, than Akira, probably. But yeah, One Piece, that definitely makes sense. And I knew it was, I think it's one of those things where, was it published on its own or started in... The manga industry is weird. There's like a magazine called Shonen Jump that you have to like get into. It's like almost like a juried magazine. And then every month... readers vote on whether or not they want the stories to continue. So you might get canceled by the readership if your comic's not good.
And so yeah, it was serialized. It's called Weekly Shonen Jump. Mm-hmm. Since July 22nd, 1997.
Gotcha. Yep. And that's, I think it's been one of the more longer lasting ones. So that explains its popularity.
Yeah.
You could just master the cliffhanger. If you can master the art of the cliffhanger, you're good to go. Imagine if Lost was in Shonen Jump. It would still be going today.
Hopefully not.
All right, Mark, thank you for a fantastic set of questions as usual.
Lee, thank you.
That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. And you can support the No-No on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Our team captains, Gil.
It's Gil.
Kristen Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, David, Holbrook, David, Holbrook, David, Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Christopher, Logan, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. Last night we had Manu, we had Matthew, and we had Elise all on trivia, and it was a lot of fun.
Hell yeah.
So thank you guys for playing. And thanks to our Rumble Snailskins, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Mike Crumple Snailskin.
Michael S.
Mike Srumple Snailskin.
And Michael J.
Mike Drumple Snailskin.
I didn't know where you were going to go with that last one. It was thrilled.
I handled that better than some of the pronunciations of the show, I think.
Yes.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, or please call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
The people keep trickling in. We have a Facebook group. You can join as well. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. I know I've been saying it a lot, but loads of fun, loads of cool content. Lee and I like to post about our personal trivias and anything else going on trivia-wise with us, as well as any information about the episodes as they come out. and any other past information, and people can update stuff about, their run-ins with the Bader-Meinhof effect. As more and more people have been noticing things popping up as they hear about them on the podcast. So feel free to come along and take part. And finally, of course, please do not forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only, please. Until next time, no nonsense listeners, have a great week.